Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, where we talk about topics related to fundraising, leadership, coaching, and management for professionals in the nonprofit world. I'm Michelle Malloy-Dillon.
And I'm David Langiuli. And Michelle, we have a wonderful guest today, Amy Varga from the Pacific Northwest. And Amy does a lot of work like we do. She works with leaders in the nonprofit world. She is does fundraising training and facilitation and coaching. And she's been at this for, more than 20 years and really making a difference with folks in the nonprofit world, helping nonprofits raise money. And she wrote a brilliant article for us for the Fundraising Leadership blog about health and wellness. So let's dive in.
Yeah, Amy, you wrote this wonderful blog about rest and renewal, and it's part of our work too. And I know that I'm finding with so many of my coaching clients right now, especially with being in COVID now for almost a year, that there's this very much a renewed sense of I need to take care of myself in deeper and more conscious ways. And so tell us what you're noticing out there and why you decided to write the blog.
Well, I think, first of all, thank you for having me. I love your podcast and all your work that you do in the community and nationally. So having me, it's a real treat to both of you. You know, I think like if you do work, you know, you asked, what am I seeing out there that inspired me to write this piece about rest and renewal? And I don't know about you, but for me, it's usually not the stuff out there that inspires me. It's the stuff in here, you know, it's the stuff that I'm also wrestling with. And so, you know, for me, yes, every leader that I've ever coached, you know, over the last 10 years that I've been doing this, struggles with work boundaries and finding time to take care of themselves and have that space for reflection. It's definitely hit epic levels, you know, in the last year. But the real reason that I wrote this was because I needed to hear it. Depending on, you know, who you are and what your circumstance is right now or over the past year, you're juggling different things. Everybody's having their own version of COVID pandemic, you know, challenges. Mine look like I have two young children. So I have a first grader and a fourth grader who've been home and learning online at our kitchen table and are still doing that. And we're their teacher right now. I'm, you know, juggling a very demanding practice. There's, you know, more than just me in the Varga group. And so we have, you know, a team that I'm managing and, working with our clients who are in lots of stressful situations of navigating their businesses. And I sit on board still, so I'm working in that way. And you know, I also have a parent who's dealing with a serious medical issue. And so all of that, you know, is going on for me personally. I see the same kinds of things and different combinations of things for leaders, but it was a really personal thing that I needed to remind myself about in this time. And so that's really what inspired me to write it.
Yeah, I love what you're saying because it does help us to write it down, to express. I've been journaling more and more right now, just as a way to sort of get it out there, put it on a piece of paper in order to kind of see it a little bit differently or to let it go. Yeah. And there's such value in practicing that. It's a practice, like you say.
Sure. Yeah, I find the most powerful question that I ask other folks, other leaders, and myself when it comes to this is, what advice do I need to give myself right now? You know, because really we are our best, you know, sort of wisdom inside of us is when we ask that. And so often, I know I read a lot of books and I look at a lot of podcasts or listen to a lot of podcasts and Google things, you know, but really when I just take a minute to do that rest piece and ask myself that question around, Amy, what do you need right now?
Sometimes it's just a nap, Amy. Yeah, I mean, I know you were framing rest in a different context in your great article. Well, you need rest also. But what I'm appreciating about being on lockdown and working from home is, and especially since I've had some health issues during this period, is a nap.
Oh, well, a nap is actually in that article. So,
oh, okay, you know, good.
You know what it can look like? It can look like a nap. It can look like, here's something I do. I scroll Instagram and look at pictures of Montana. Because that's a form of rest, yeah. Right? You can read, you can watch The Bachelor, you know, or whatever, fill in your blank crappy TV show you like.
Burn Notice. I'm watching Burn Notice right
there
now.
There you go, right? You know, you can take an online class. We started making bread because we took a class online and you know, learned about that. My personal favorite way that I renew, besides all this other stuff that we just listed, which is, I think, valid, you know, I'd throw in eating something yummy, you know, getting takeout from your favorite place, et cetera, all to that. But for me, my most consistent, you know, way that I renew is I take long walks. Those were important to me before this lockdown stuff, but it's been literally my sanity. Going out with my dog for 3 to 5 miles and just being alone outside. Sometimes I listen to music that I haven't heard since high school because, you know, that's sort of fun. And sometimes I listen to a podcast and sometimes I listen to nothing other than just what's around me. But that's what I do, you know, in addition to all the other silly fun stuff that's not so silly and really important.
One of the key things that I'm really noticing in what you're saying, Amy, is this sort of new awareness or this consciousness that we all need to have an awareness, like, what do I need right now for this moment or for this day? And sometimes it can be, I'm going to take a few deep breaths and just center myself for a moment. Sometimes it can be, I need a 30-minute nap. Sometimes it means I go out for a long walk. Like, it on different days, it means some different things. But what I'm noticing is there's more need for me on a personal level to tune in with myself. It just feels like sort of the old world was I can work real hard and then the weekend happens and then I kind of let loose or whatever that is. It just feels like more of a daily balance now because there's not those separations as much, work and home, family and work, you know, all these other kind of multidimensional things that we're all handling.
Yes, that's right. I don't know if either of you saw the excellent piece that Beth Cantor recently put out on her blog about we all like to lament commuting in the past or driving around to things, but actually, and you know, it's not that fun, you know, but this idea that we don't have that transitional time, you know, is a loss in a strange way that people maybe didn't appreciate. And so she wrote this excellent piece on creating a fake commute for yourself. Mm-hmm. That you could go out and walk or do something in the morning that you would have spent that 20 minutes or however long driving to what could you repurpose that time for that you can create those transition times before and after work, your workday, so that you put a more structured approach, even in this time when we're at home. And I really liked that idea. And I thought that was a neat way of thinking about how to, you know, one idea of how to navigate this time.
Absolutely. I've had some clients get really creative with that idea. I've had clients get on their, you know, their stationary bike for 30 minutes, you know, at the end of the workday, or actually physically go outside, or even enjoy their kids or their new puppy or something like that and say, okay, every day at 5 o'clock, this is what we're doing. We're, you know, just to circle the block and come back.
Exactly.
To create that transition.
That's right.
Yeah. I know my husband was got really into cooking. So his transition became just cooking a real creative meal with whatever ingredients we had at the time. And so that's been his way of transitioning.
Yeah. I think that you know, while I think this is showing up in a particular way, you know, in this time that we're in, this idea that, you know, self-care as a wellness activity is great. But I think there's also another piece, which is around the having white space, you know, in your day and in your mind and in your life is critical for leaders to be able to think and reflect. You know, even I've been calling it BC before coronavirus, you know, so like in the BC time, you know, that was true. Yeah, this is a time we're all living in that there's some different challenges, but the reality is before coronavirus, I still struggled with this. And every leader that I ever coached also struggled with this. The particulars were different, but the struggle was the same. And when I've asked leaders, what's the one thing you wish you had more of? They consistently say time to think. And we can't have that space and time to think without making space on our calendar, you know, and having that white space. And, you know, the idea that when, you know, everyone's had the experience of having a great idea come to them when they're taking a shower or they're driving somewhere or something like that. And that's what that's about, is in that sort of downtime when you're not actively working, your brain makes connections. And, you know, things can emerge in that sort of what we think of as emptiness, but it's really not. Your brain needs time to make sense of things and to make connections between things. And so I think it's not just about rest for your sort of physical well-being or self-care, but it's actually a critical component of being able to think strategically and be able to make purposeful choices as a leader.
Well, and in the blog you wrote, you know, you talk about, you talk about putting stress on our mental muscles where we don't have a chance to sort of rest and recover. It's very similar to a physical muscle in our body. Mm-hmm. If you're constantly working out, it's just going to.
You're going to break down.
Yeah, break down.
You know, the body breaks down and you're going to have a mental breakdown. And what I'm noticing is that in the work from home environment where we're juggling all of the various balls that you mentioned, Amy, as far as parents, children, spouses, dogs, you know, just at work and, you know, that level of stress, there is, you know, there seems to be an amplification of that stress and that's causing some breakdowns. I mean, it could cause like a serious mental breakdown, but there are other forms of breakdowns that can happen, like exhaustion or just cloudiness or so I'd like you to.
And impulsiveness.
What would you recommend for folks?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, what you were talking about, Michelle, is this idea that when we frame stress as bad, that's not actually true. So like you were saying, similar in a physical context, if we want to get stronger, physically stronger, then we actually have to stress our muscles. You know, the absence of stress does not create strength or resilience. And so it's, you know, there's an article that's linked in the blog post that's one of my all-time favorites to share with people, which is called The Making of a Corporate Athlete. It's an old iconic article from the Harvard Business Review. And there, you know, I'm pulling from that to say this, which is that it's the oscillation between stress and recovery, just like in a physical context, that creates strength. So when you stress a muscle, let it recover and then stress it again, that's how you build endurance and strength. And so very similarly in our professional and our mental capacities, it's the goal is not to eliminate stress. First of all, that would be an impossible goal. It's that we need to have an appropriate level of stress and have the space to navigate that stress and to recover from that stress. So creating that white space, having a demanding career is a good thing. It provides meaning. It invites you to meet the moment and to deliver and all of those things. It's just that we then also have to have time to recover and rest so that we can get up and do it again, so to speak. And what I see most leaders struggling with is that they don't have that rest. It's just constant stress. And that's the problem. So I think when we talk about self-care and some of these other things, oftentimes I worry that the people that are talking about it give the impression that what we're trying to create is a stress-free environment or a stress-free life. That's just not possible. And actually, it's not beneficial if you think about it in this other way. So I think, David, your question, what would I recommend? I think one of the first things is to reframe this idea that we're trying to create a no stress, that stress is inherently bad. And to first reframe our thinking around that, to say stress can be very productive. It's that we need to have the corresponding rest time to build that resilience and endurance and strength.
What I really like about this idea, Amy, is that you're right. We're not going to eliminate any of the stressors that we have. And the more that we want to eliminate them, the greater stress
the
we
stress
feel
you
because
get.
We're like, oh my God, this is intolerable.
I can't get rid of all this stress.
Exactly.
That, so what we can do is
stressing me out. You're stressing me out right now, Michelle.
It becomes a form of stress in and of itself. That's
exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Why can't I get rid of all this stress? That's stressing me out.
Exactly.
But what we can do is we can create some white space. Like, oh, I'm feeling stressed. It's just a fact. What can I do in this moment to create a little bit of white space?
Exactly.
Or maybe it's not in this moment. Maybe I'm going to, you know, take 24 hours and just not work sometime in the next week, you know, whatever that is.
Exactly. That's right.
Yeah. Well, what
I think it kind of aligns with some of the work that's been around for a while by, see if I can pronounce the name, Mihai Csikszentmihalyi, in the field of flow. So there's a certain amount of challenge or stress, you could call it stress, that is required actually for us to get into a state of flow. There has to be some kind of challenge. And the challenge is usually best when it's just enough stress where we can rise to meet the challenge and not get overwhelmed by it. Yeah. So I like that.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's where it never, you know, when you feel really accomplished, like if you think about a time when you feel like, wow, I'm really proud of that accomplishment. It's something that challenged you. It's something that was somewhat stressful that you rose to the occasion to deliver on. It's not very satisfying when something wasn't challenging, you know? And so that's, again, I think so much of this, we have these expectations that it's sort of like when people say like, my goal is to be happy. It's like, well, you know, you're not going to be happy, 24/7. Is that really the goal? You know, and similarly, I think that trying to create zero stress is a futile attempt anyway. And it's actually not, even if you were to be able to create that for yourself, it wouldn't be satisfying. It wouldn't actually develop you as a leader or a person for that matter.
Yeah, I can certainly look back on times in my life when I wasn't stressed enough and felt completely lethargic.
Exactly.
And wasn't getting anything done, right? Yeah. So, yeah, it's sort of that
boring
opposite.
In some ways.
Yeah, very boring.
Very boring, you know? Mm-hmm. So I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's something about our culture where we reward stress, or we think of stress as being something that we you know, has greater importance than it actually has.
Badge of honor.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, check this out. Here's the thing. If we make more white space, if we work less, if we have less of that kind of stress, what that leaves us with is having to face our life and ourselves. So if you weren't working all the time and you weren't running around crazy and busy all the time, what might you do? And what I have found myself, for myself and for others, is sometimes I don't know, or they don't know. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's another piece of this, a little bit of an antidote to this, is to figure out what is it that you're interested in outside of work, and what might you do, even in a small way, to poke a toe into making a little bit of time for that? Because if we have less stress, if we are working less, we, you know, the goal in theory is to have more time. But I think sometimes it's actually a little bit scary for people to have that time because they don't quite know what they do with it. And so I think it's important to have hobbies and to have interests outside of work that you don't commercialize. I mean, that's another thing that I could go on a long rant with, but today I think so many people think of hobbies as then they have to, you know, if they really like to knit, then they're going to start an Etsy store and start selling it. Like, you know, maybe it's just knitting because it's fun to knit. You know, you're not going to commercialize it in some way. So I would say resist the urge to turn your hobby into a side, you know, a side gig or an Etsy store or whatever. And just what is it that you genuinely enjoy doing? And that can help, I think, make you more interested or comfortable, maybe even having more space or downtime in your life.
Well, what we're getting to here is, what do you want the whole of your life to feel like and to be like? And work is one of those things. And it, you know, even if work is very rewarding and you're passionate about your work, if that's all you're doing, that can feel imbalanced after a while. Mm-hmm. So figuring out what, you know, what is, who am I as a whole person? Who am I, Michelle, as a whole person?
Exactly. That's
how do
right.
I want to spend my life?
That's right. Yeah. I think that is, that's one of the most important questions that we can reckon with as people, and aligning how we spend our time with what emerges when you reckon with that question.
Well, what I like about what you were saying earlier, Amy, about hobbies is that knitting or whatever it is, it can be a source of great enjoyment without necessarily being goal directed.
Exactly.
Like what I like about something that has nothing to do with anything is you can get creative with it.
That's right.
And take risks and fail and try stuff. Like I'm mindful, Michelle, you were saying Jean is been experimenting with cooking. Mm-hmm. And it's something that's near and dear to my own heart. You know, every now and then I whip something up and it's a complete flop. But you go for it, you know, it's like, okay, that one didn't work. And thankfully I've got an indulgent wife and children who eat my flops.
Exactly. And that's part of what makes it fun. You know, it becomes a story, right? I mean, it becomes a story. And those are memories. That's living. And that's, I think, what the goal is here. And as leaders, we have a big influence over on the folks that we're leading. And so I think another piece of this is, it's not just for leaders themselves to do this for their own benefit. I think obviously we've established that it is to their own benefit. But I think also we have to model what we are giving, you know, that's a form of giving permission to those that work for us. And so I think I worry when leaders don't model this and struggle with this, that they're communicating, even if they say, oh, I want you to have boundaries. I want you to take time off. I want you to, you know, have time with your family, blah, blah. That if they're saying that, but their actions are not in alignment with that, they're not actually giving permission to those that work for them or with them to embrace this. And I think that's, if you aren't doing it for yourself, which I hope we've, you know, a bit inspired people to think about doing for themselves, I think that's another big motivation or reason for people to take this seriously is, mm-hmm. you know, leaders, my experience is leaders really do care about those that they're leading and they do want the best for them. And this is a gift to them. When you do this, it gives them permission to log off and not feel pressure to be on email at all hours of the day or wondering if it's okay to take vacation time before, you know, they are forced to because they're going to lose it, you know, or whatever. So I think that's another big piece of this for leaders in particular is that it's a way of modeling and giving permission to those that that are in their organizations. It's very important, I think, from that yeah. perspective as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in your blog, Amy, you talk about a few different ways that we can all sort of create some yeah. white space or some
yeah.
some rest
yes,
in our right. world.
Yeah. Well, I think some people need more structure around that than others. And so, you know, in the blog post, there's a link to a really neat, if you haven't heard about the Wind Call Institute, it's a really, really wonderful program that leaders can apply to have a sabbatical through. It funds their organization to have them have a sabbatical, which is a really, you know, a unique way of resting in a longer term way. But Wind Call is really committed to all of the things that we've been talking about today. And so they have a calendar that gives you a couple ideas each day of how you might experiment with little micro rest pieces. And that's, I think, a very actionable thing. You can just go on there and download that and see and be inspired or even follow along with what they have there. And so I think that's a simple way to think about that. The other thing that, you know, you guys were joking and I could not agree more that trying to conquer stress can itself become stressful, you know, and a form of beating ourselves up around. And so I think sometimes what I do and I've seen other people do is we forget that we can start really small. Hmm. Sometimes we think, okay, I'm gonna take this rest thing more seriously. I'm going to, you know, get a bullet journal and I'm going to write down these five habits that I'm going to track. I'm going to drink water. I'm going to walk 5 miles a day. I'm going to do my Peloton 3 days a week and on, right? And then that becomes a form of stress. And maybe that works for you, or maybe that's where you're at. But more often than not, we start that, especially now, you know, I'm thinking about we're in February now and people do a lot of that kind of, you know, New Year's resolution-y kind of stuff. And then it falls off. And that's typically how that works. So I like to just say, start small. What is one micro thing that you can do right now? And it might be just literally taking a deep breath, you know, yeah. In the moment, just when you're feeling overwhelmed to just take a moment. And that in and of itself is rest. You don't have to think about it like I need to take a week off or I need to log off for the weekend. Maybe that's a thing that you can do, but maybe it's not right now. Maybe what you can do right now is to just schedule 10 minutes in between Zoom meetings instead of Zooming them back to back. And in that 10 minutes, just getting a drink of water and not checking your email and, you know, catching your breath. So I think when we over plan for how to take rest, it kind of backfires most of the time.
I must take rest. This is exactly what it's going to look like.
Right. And then I think the other thing, and you know, David, this is something I've seen you talk about in other, you know, in your work, but along these same lines of kind of giving ourselves a break and having these micro moments of rest, to start there, if that's, you know, where you're at, which it's where most of us are, to be honest, mm-hmm. is this idea of having compassion for ourselves. I think self-compassion is the power twin of rest, you know?
Yeah. Well, so, yes, I agree. You know? I'm deeply invested currently in some of Christian Neff and Christopher Germer's work around mindful self-compassion. I'm just actually with a group of people and we're finishing up their excellent workbook on this topic. So that's another thing that many of us struggle with. We work in the nonprofit world. We can generate compassion for people who we serve. And yet for some of us, and myself included, it can be very challenging to generate compassion for ourselves. So I do recommend, in addition to your excellent article, this work around mindful self-compassion. Yeah.
I have that same workbook and, you know, it's a little bit of a tricky thing because for those of us that are successful, we're driven and we're motivated and we're ambitious. And often we fuel that with pushing ourselves. And that often is not a compassionate voice that's pushing ourselves. and that's effective in some ways. But I think the older I've gotten, the more that I have learned that I need to cultivate that other piece that inside of me around just being compassionate with myself.
Yeah, even when, so to pick up on what you were suggesting to the audience, it can be very difficult for driven hyperachievers, people who can want to control everything, to take that 10-minute break. So even when you're noticing that it's difficult for you, me, anybody in the audience to just, the restlessness comes in, give yourself a break around that.
Exactly.
The fact that this is hard for me. It's hard for me to take a break right now. This is a growth edge for me. And other people have similar difficulties taking breaks. I'm not alone in this. So this is the work of Kristen Neff.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And that's right. And so that's the conversation just personally that I have with myself every day. Mm-hmm. It is mm-hmm. hard for me to take breaks. It is hard for me to rest. I have a quote I can see right off this camera here that we're talking on that says, "Nothing is harder than doing nothing." it's really hard for me. And it's, you know, it can be confusing for other people. My husband, he's like, "I can do nothing all dang day," you know? And that's,
he's the king of nothing and you're the queen of everything.
Right.
What a great couple.
Exactly. So I don't want to give the wrong impression. He's not a sloth doing nothing around the house. That would be completely inaccurate and unfair. But so if there's a person in your life that is actually a master at being able to turn off work and put those boundaries, that's actually a person that can be super helpful to you as a partner. You know, for him, he's hyper-focused when he's doing work and he's committed and doing all of that. However, he's able to turn it off. And that's a real struggle for me. And so he's, you know, actually, I will say maybe last week sometime, I was in our room. I normally leave my phone downstairs. I think that's another tip, is leave your phone outside of your bedroom and don't bring it in there, your computer, whatever. And I almost never do that. But for whatever reason, I was doing work on my phone in our room, in my bed at night. I mean, like the worst of all things.
Breaking all the rules.
All the rules. And he came to me and he was like, "Hand it over. give it to me." And I was like, "No, I don't want to." I mean, I really didn't want to, which is, you know, it was like, I'm the queen of like promoting this stuff, you know, and I'm, you know, like, "I don't want to give my phone to you." And he just was like kind, but firm. Yeah. I was like, put the phone in my hand right now. And he took it downstairs for me because I was never going to get up and take it down there. You know, for whatever reason, I was in that.
That's why this is a practice.
We have covered a ton of ground, a lot of things for folks to think about and read about in your excellent article with some great links. Of all the things we discussed, what's the one thing you want to challenge the audience to put into practice?
To pick one small micro rest piece that they want to try today. Excellent. So not tomorrow, you know, not next week,
today.
But today, just one small thing, whether that's just stopping to take a breath between meetings or even right now when you're listening, you know, just take a deep breath that's not, you know, in your throat, but down in your tummy, you know, that deep breath.
Great. Great. Thank you, Amy. Thank you so much. Yes.
And where can the audience find you, Amy? What's the best way for them to reach out to you? Where can they find you?
Got it. There's two ways. My website, which is thevargagroup.com, and I have a newsletter, and that's a place I write about these kinds of things on. And then another place that lots of people like to find me is on LinkedIn under Amy Varga, and I post on a lot of different resources. They're mostly not mine, and they're mostly not, you know, fundraising related. They're all along the themes that we've been talking about today. And so those would be the two places that I think most people would be able to find my work.
Oh, great. It's been wonderful to have you as a guest, and Amy.
Thank you.
This podcast is brought to you by Fundraising Leadership. We provide unique coaching and training programs that powerfully transform how you work in order to get results. Please subscribe if you haven't already, and you can find us on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music Podcasts, and Spotify. And if you're enjoying the show, please rate and review it so others can find us as well. Now go put it into practice.